Grow CFO is where finance leaders grow together. Join thousands of like-minded professionals using Grow CFO to access the combined knowledge and experience of the finance leader community. You can join us today at growcfo.net. Hello and welcome to the Grow CFO show. Today, my guest is Catherine Marks. Catherine is a tutor on the FP&A bootcamp and is a very experienced FP&A professional and used to leading and reshaping a finance function. Together, Catherine and I are going to be running the Quest in January for our premium members, which is looking at evaluating your finance function. In particular, evaluating the team within the finance function to work out what you've got, whether it's right for the journey going forward. So, Catherine, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks, Kevin. Good to be back.
So, Catherine, tell me a little bit about your experience in Depop when you did this in earnest.
Yes, quite. Where to start, really? I think so when I approached thinking about the finance team at Depop, and indeed elsewhere, is something that can be applied to lots of different finance situations. And I know we're going to talk a lot more about that in the Quest in January and give folks some great tools and techniques. Let me talk to sort of five broad steps that I would go through. And one of them includes, you know, a fantastic piece of research from Grow CFO, which I benefited from during my time at Depop. So we'll come back to that. I think, you know, where I'd always start is asking myself, okay, let's take a step back and ask what's going on in the wider business. What is relevant in terms of the kind of finance team that we need to be in, let's say, 3 years' time in order to support what we're expecting in the business. Now, 3 years is a bit of a rule of thumb. It could be a shorter or indeed longer time frame, depending on the circumstances of your business.
I think 3 years is a sensible time frame because it's not too far in the future to be using a crystal ball. It's far enough to say, well, we've got a reasonable strategy for the business over this period. We should have some business plans evolving. We should have an idea of what our ambition is. I think looking 10 years ahead, and probably we've got to bear in mind in the Finance Transformation Bootcamp, Ollie Deacon is talking about 60% of finance jobs not existing in 10 years' time. One in 10 people realizing that that's the fact, that the skills they've got today aren't the skills they need tomorrow, and a whole new skill set needed to give the sort of support that we're going to need in 5 to 10 years. So yeah. I think we're looking possibly at two things here, Catherine. We're looking at how do you support the business in that immediate three-year plan that you can see, but how do I evolve the finance team as well to give me the right skills and capabilities that I'm going to need the way the world's changing?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's sort of why I picked the 3 years. It's not so far into the future. We need to be on that journey, but we can't fix everything overnight. Yeah. But also, we don't want to be putting in systems. And I know we're straying slightly off the path of people, but of course, it's very relevant in terms of the team that you've got, what systems that you've got.
Go back 3 years, and who would have said that AI and doing what it's doing to people's jobs would be a real thing? I think that's a very good reason why you don't try to plan more than 3 years out, because you just don't know what's on the horizon.
Yeah, but also not too short. We want to put a system in that we're going to have outgrown in a year or two from now. It's an expensive and time-consuming process. So thinking about the team in the context of the systems and processes evolving over the next 3 years, I think is really sensible. You know, largely driven by our expectations of what's going to happen in the business. What is in your three-year strategic plan? So I think that's step one. That's where I would start. Next, I would come on to sort of some big picture benchmarking of the finance function itself. And that's where the Grow CFO research comes in. So that's a report that I think is called The Size of Your Finance Team.
And if you want to get a hold of a copy of that, I'll put a link in the show notes, but you'll find it in the Insights tab on the Grow CFO website. It's down there as a report that you can download.
I would highly recommend that our listeners do so. It's a really helpful piece of research, and it goes through 10 different factors that will influence the size of your team, and then benchmarks based on a survey of the Grow CFO community as to what is the likely size of your team for different stages of a business life cycle, different sizes of business. What we could do, if it's helpful, Kevin, I'll talk through sort of my 5 big picture steps, and then we can come back to that. I can talk a bit about how I applied it at Depop.
Because I think realizing in that report that one size does not fit all. There are those 10 factors that you've just mentioned, and very much you should be scoring yourself against those 10 factors to decide what sort of benchmark you should be looking at.
Yeah.
Okay, so we talked about benchmarking, looking at that size of a finance team report, and getting some ideas from it. So that's two of the 5 steps, Catherine.
Let's continue. So third, I would map out roles and responsibilities. So having gone through those 10 factors and thought about the big picture benchmarking, I would have a think about, okay, what are the roles and responsibilities in my team? And I would map both the BAU and the projects. In finance, there's always some project or another going on, whether it's those back burner process improvement projects that we never quite get to because we're all so busy with our month end and our BAU processes, or perhaps very urgent projects. The Depop example was integrating, where we'd been acquired by Etsy, and there were a number of things that we had to do to integrate with Etsy's systems and processes, and that were required for regulatory reasons. So SOX compliance, for example, which had a hard deadline. So do map out all of those things with particular focus on the projects, which we tend to underestimate. Have a think about both the urgency and the effort required across all of those.
And I guess that takes you back to the first consideration, the business plan, the strategy of the business going forward. Now, inevitably, if there's growth going on, substantial growth going on, the finance systems, processes, and so on that you've got today probably aren't going to be the ones that you're going to need in 3 years' time. That implies a project to sort them out.
Yeah, absolutely. I think this whole sort of 5-step process is iterative. I'm always coming back to that. Okay, what do we think things are going to look like in 3 years?
Okay, so we've got an idea of what's business as usual. Business as usual may change because we're growing, or maybe may get what we refer to as business as usual today. Might be dealing with 100,000 transactions. It might be dealing with 150,000 transactions in 3 years' time. So we've got to have an idea of that. We've got the project. You mentioned those things that are, well, we know certain systems are creaking and grinding. We know there are certain things that we've got to implement just to comply. And we know there are certain things that will not work if this business is where we think it's going to be in 3 years' time. So we've got a whole range of projects there. Now, I guess there's a fourth type of project we've probably got to think about that's easily missed. What projects are going on in the rest of the business where they might need a bit of finance support in the project team?
Yeah, again, something that's often underestimated and, you know, really relies on us having good, strong relationships with the business so that we get good foresight of those projects and where our help will be needed. And, you know, another thing to look out for there is how similar are those projects to our BAU? If they're not fitting the existing model of what we're doing, they're likely to require additional effort doing things in different ways. Otherwise, we end up with a lot of creative but manual workarounds. It's a really good idea to get a good foresight of what those projects might be.
And there's something about the finance brain, I think, that's very good at coming up with creative manual workarounds. And undoing all those creative manual workarounds at a later date can give you a real problem.
Yes, it can. It's all very well doing creative manual workarounds for short-term fixes. But before we know it, those things have just become part of the BAU and grown arms and legs.
Yeah. So that's 3 things we've covered off. Number 4, Catherine.
Number 4, of course, your existing individuals in your team. What are their skill sets? What's their performance? and what are their ambitions? How can they fit? What are their development needs that could be met by the finance team structure that you want to create?
And I think that's a big one that we're following up on the quest. How do you evaluate your current team? And then how do you put development plans in place to take people forward? I think there's a load of aspects to that. And I think three things we probably have to think about there. The straightforward competencies and skills. What have you got now? What do you need in the future? Where can we develop things? Then I think there are two other things you've got to consider. What are the individual strengths? And I'm a huge fan of StrengthsFinder. StrengthsFinder allows you to work out what people's top five strengths are and gives people a whole load of strategies on what to do in the workplace to maximize those strengths. So they can give you some great clues as to where you can move people around, different tasks that you could introduce them to, and so on. Then I think there's a third piece that's about values. What do people want? It's no good saying, oh, okay, my head of accounts payable is going to have to move on and become more of a controller in the future. Does your head of accounts payable actually want that extra responsibility, that extra pressure? Is there a value there? A lot of us at the senior end of finance are probably quite ambitious, got big career goals, so on. But some of our more junior people may not. Going to work, earning a living, and spending time with the family and doing things outside of work might be the biggest consideration. So, people may be able to develop skills, may have strengths in certain areas, but do they necessarily want to be tapped on the shoulder to move into this new role? I think that element of the assessment as well, we've got to think about.
100%. It's about having those very open conversations with each individual. And it may be just that the time frames are for different people. They're prioritizing other things in their life other than acquiring new skills at work. Or that, it just, will be done over a longer time frame than someone who's looking for the next promotion very imminently. So I think all of those things are very relevant to take into consideration.
So we've got a fifth one.
We do have a fifth one. How is your team working overall? So taking all of those individuals into consideration, how do the dynamics work within them? How does your accounting team interact with your FP&A team? One great thing to have a look at is Google's Project Aristotle, which looked at, it's a quest itself to find what makes the most successful team. And I'd recommend having a read about that. Interestingly, the thing that came top is psychological safety, people having the freedom to make mistakes and not be judged for that, but to learn from them, share them openly, and to feel comfortable to contribute ideas. Get your team involved on how you can improve things. I recall we did a half-day workshop at Depop, for example, where we came together as a team and we talked about what is it that we want to do better. Don't come up with all of the ideas yourself as the leader, and the best ideas will come from the team.
I think that's very important. Any sort of change is best if the people that are being changed think they've come up with the ideas. So involve folk. Now, you get situations where a transformation is quite radical and it means that you're losing people. My advice from years and years of consulting experience is that if you've got to lose people, you take those people out of the equation as quickly as possible. And then you use the people that are left in order to work on the change going forward and redesign things and be part of the process. People that are leaving can be very, very destructive. I hope we're not talking that situation. We're talking about teams that are possibly struggling, that haven't grown as quickly as the business, that need extra people, not fewer people. People are stretched. And the reason the team isn't performing is because people don't have time or have never been in a position to have time to upskill in order to do what's now necessary.
Yeah, absolutely right. So how can we create all of those things? And sometimes it's a case of re-motivating, re-energizing. And I think if people are involved and can see that path forwards and you've got an aligned vision of what that is that fits with the overall company vision but I think it's important to have a specific finance team vision as well.
So take me back into Depop. We've talked once or twice about that as we've gone along, but talk to me about what exactly you did going through those five steps. How did you apply them to that business?
Well, let me come back to the sort of specifically the second step. So the big picture benchmarking and how I used Gross CFO report and factors that are outlined there. That's a really helpful way of looking at things. And I actually threw in an 11th, which I'll come to. The first item on the list in the report is group structure. So, you know, have a think about what does that look like for your business? If there's more divisions that each have separate financial management, you're going to need a larger overall finance function. I think if you're part of a group, then the level of centralization and divisional autonomy is very important, defines to what level, you know, processes are repeated at both the parent and the subsidiary level. There can be many reasons for setting things up in different ways, whether it's cultural, it might be language related, but yeah, different teams can look very different and that will have a big impact on the size of your team. At Depop, I assessed that as a medium. It wasn't a particularly complex structure, but we did, by virtue of the acquisition by Etsy, need to conform to some systems and processes there. So yeah, sort of medium in the middle there.
So as we move on through that list, there's group structure, number of entities closely related to that. Whether you're operating internationally or not, that adds some complexity as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And all of those things may be related. Of course, the larger number of legal entities that you have, and there may be very good business reasons or tax reasons for the way that you're set up. But do bear in mind that each entity, particularly if it's in a different country, it's going to have its own reporting requirements. And it can add quite a significant workload and requirement for specialized skills in terms of preparing and filing company accounts that can be different in each country, going through an audit in each of those cases, international tax planning. So do bear in mind that can have quite a disproportionate impact on workload. In terms of the international piece, as well as the regulatory requirements with foreign legal entities, that there's other operational considerations as well. You know, you're getting into multiple currencies, local taxes, different accounting standards, all of those good things. And again, they can add a disproportionate workload, you know, finding a balance between optimizing profits and minimizing risks, but also not leading to huge inefficiencies and higher overheads is important, but can be tricky.
And then we get into the overall, we're touching on already the level of complexity around the business. Is this a simple process? Is it relatively simple or is it complicated? Nature of the transactions then within it. Are these simple transactions? Are they complex transactions?
Yeah, exactly. A lot of things can impact the nature of transactions. So the size, the complexity of deals, the third parties involved, the level of risk. If it's a pure volume issue in terms of transactions, of course, we can look at automation opportunities, albeit that might not be our starting point, but that's one to
consider. And I guess in Depop, you had a large number of very similar looking transactions because you're operating an online model. It's a fairly straightforward model.
Yeah, absolutely. Not particularly complex in terms of the nature of the transactions. Actually, the biggest problem that we had was when, you know, coming back to those sort of projects that we were talking about before, Kevin, when the business wanted to do something that didn't necessarily fit well with the existing BAU model, which of course was great from a marketing perspective and doing some great business initiatives, but it could sometimes cause problems from a finance perspective. And so overall, I sort of rated that low in terms of for the majority of our transactions, low complexity, but could be a medium for some of that ad hoc work.
Then we're talking about the stuff that you're doing with investors.
Yes. And of course, it depends on your company ownership, yes, the types of investors that you have, their levels of interest. It can be that there's multiple private investors, but they're quite hands-off with day-to-day work, or it could be a more heavily involved venture capitalist or PE investor. Of course, if the company has publicly traded equity or debt, which has been in the case in a number of organizations I've worked in, it needs regular external updates and additional reporting. In larger groups, the external facing role is often undertaken by a parent company. I think it's likely to put at least some additional burden on local teams. Often numbers need slicing and dicing in a slightly different way.
Yeah. So in Depop, you had the takeover with it by Etsy. That's effectively a new investor. That must have put some different pressures on the finance team.
Yeah, absolutely. And there you've got sort of two different levels to think about. It's the relationship with the parent company, and you know, working with Etsy had a very different style to other organizations that I'd worked with, a very much more open relationship, which is fantastic in a lot of ways, versus some other organizations that I've been in where it was very much more managed in terms of the story that we were telling, setting the expectations. And partly that's driven by where the business is in its life cycle as well, how volatile things are and so on.
And let's flip that the other way, Catherine. You were acquired. You may be in a business that is growing by acquisition. So as you bring in a new business, what does that look like for finance? That's definitely worth considering. And often in cost reduction sessions, I've talked about the business that took over the consultancy that I was working for. I was working for a consultancy called Hydra. We had about 250 employees and we joined the Mouchel Group and we were simply 50% of their consulting division. And they had six or seven other divisions. They were acquiring businesses all over the place, but more or less keeping their back offices doing what they'd always done. Gave us a huge problem further down the road when we had to cut some cost out of the business because we had seven, eight accounting teams. As you're looking at size of finance team, ask yourself the question, are you going to acquire somebody? Are you going to acquire them and keep them as they are? Or are you going to integrate their finance team with your finance team? And what's the impact on that?
Yeah, absolutely. That is a whole topic in itself and one that I know we've got scheduled in to talk about in 2024, Kevin.
Absolutely. Yes. I think that'd be a fascinating to look at that. How do you actually merge two finance teams together? We'll pick that up in another conversation sometimes.
Yeah, I think it's not something that most of us do all of the time, unless we're in an organization which is highly acquisitive. And in that case, there could be teams that are specifically focused on that. But certainly, I've learned from a few mistakes and bumps along the way from my previous experiences. So yeah, let's share that.
Okay. So takes us to the end of the list. I'm looking at that and saying, well, okay, the end considerations, we've probably talked about regulatory requirements already, but we're looking at technology. We're looking at outsourcing, both strong possibilities. If you're saying, how do we do finance around here?
Yeah, I think, you know, technology and indeed outsourcing is both really significant ones. Having the right tech solutions in place means that we can streamline processes and reduce manual demands on the team, obviously impacts then what our future team should look like. And also, you know, the more they can focus on the value add things, it's better all round. We all want to reduce the time that we spend on data collection and manipulation, simplify reporting, but it takes a time investment to get there. And that's why, and we'll come onto it in a minute, I added my 11th consideration to the list of 10. But often it can be a really good opportunity.
Consideration number 11 is?
It is project activity, because I would call that out as its own category because it's so easy to underestimate it. And I think that you need to think about it in a different way. Is it, what do we think that that project workload's going to look like? To what extent can we absorb it within our sort of permanent BAU structure with, you know, a little bit of capacity for project work? To what extent does it need to be, or do we need additional interim resource to get us through a period of high change? And how do we go about that? We're often stuck in this situation of needing extra resource. Sometimes we might want to look to external third parties to help with that. But then often it's really the people that are doing the job day to day that have the insight as to how it can be improved. So finding the right balance there.
So for Depop, you looked at each of those 10 or 11 factors and you'd ranked yourself for each low, medium or high. What did that look like overall?
The overall conclusion was that we were in medium to high,
yep,
but for a transitional period. A lot of the underlying transactions, processes, it wasn't particularly complex, but it was a big effort to get us from A to B because, you know, we were needing to do all of that to mature our finance function within the context of being in a US listed business. And it needed a lot of finance transformation effort to get there. Yeah, medium to high, but with the opportunity for that to be a little bit lower in terms of the permanent BAU structure going forwards.
Within the size of a finance team report, there's a table very early in the report that looks at the company size, both in terms of employees overall and group revenue, and then says, okay, how big should the finance team be, depending on whether you've come out with a low, medium or high assessment in complexity? So you did that. Were the numbers you actually had on the in the team in line with the numbers that the report said you should have?
No, Kevin, they definitely weren't. But I think what then, having gone through this framework and used the very helpful benchmarking, what that gave me is the basis for a really robust conversation about what the finance team needed to look like and why, what benefits would that bring to the business. Adding back office staff is never a popular topic. It's important to be really well prepared for that conversation, yeah, and to have really gone through
the thinking. You've got to present a solid business case for whatever you want to do.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it really helped me to think about what's the interim look like and what's the long-term vision. So help me to structure those conversations and secure the investment that we needed to grow the team.
So you were looking overall to grow the team, needed more people in the team, even though you said that over time you could go from medium high to maybe medium low.
Yeah.
So that to me would imply that you probably needed some different skills in the team to the ones that you had.
Absolutely.
Okay. So, Catherine, one tool that we've got now that in Grow CFO that you didn't have in Depop is the Grow CFO competency frameworks. We developed the CFO competency framework originally, mainly to sit alongside our future CFO program to say, here are the 9 competencies and 5 skills within each, so 45 skills we'd expect a senior finance leader to display. Now, finance leaders, assess yourself against this framework. Now, what we've done is extend that so that we've got a competency framework for controllers, competency framework for FP&A people. In all, we've got 4 different competency frameworks that would work for whatever area people in your team are in. So how do you think that tool would have been for you back in this Depop situation? Do you think that would have made a big difference, having something you could really use to assess your people?
Yes. I wish I'd had it then, Kevin. Because in the moments, yeah, I did not have a lot of time to invest in building such a thing for myself. So that would have been really helpful. The competency frameworks, that the 4 new ones that we've added, are designed to work across the whole finance team. So there should be one that fits for everyone in the team. It's a 15-minute self-assessment, which generates a report for the individual and gives a really great basis then for those development conversations.
Because inevitably, if you've got a finance team of, say, 15 people, you've discovered from the work that we've done around the size of the team that perhaps in 3 years' time, you might need 17 people. Okay. You've got to definitely therefore recruit two. But if it's a transaction processing, currently you've got 8 of your team there, and in future you probably only need 4. Well, that's gain 2, but lose 4 in that area. So hang on, what about that 4? Are there people there that you can develop into the new roles? Or is there some element of trying to get rid and replace with the skills you want? So having those competency frameworks, being able to assess people, being able to give people development plans, really, really helps that thinking. We'll go through how to do all of that in the quest.
I'm looking forward to it, Kevin.
Yeah. So a reminder, we're starting the quest on Monday, the 8th of January. It's going to be at 4 p.m. UK time. It's free to any Grow CFO premium member. So you can go into, if you're a premium member of Grow CFO, you can go in there, you can sign up for the quest straight away. If you're not a premium member, well, you can join and take a month's premium membership out to do the quest, or you can buy the quest as an individual product on our website. It is cheaper to join as a monthly member than actually just buy the quest. But looking forward to seeing as many of you as possible when we kick the quest off on the 8th of January.
I think this is going to be a fantastic one to kick off the year, Kevin. So hope to see lots of people there.
Objectives for your finance function must be on the agenda for just about everybody. And if that's, how do I reshape this to cope with the future? Well, you've got to evaluate where you are now. You've got to know where you're baselining this. Catherine, that has been fantastic. Thank you very much for being this week's guest on the Grow CFO Show.
Thanks, Kevin.